We may look at some questions. Later today or tomorrow, if anybody wants to ask verbal questions, you're also welcome. Either do that today or tomorrow. You will find the answers to most questions, if they are vital questions, within yourself, or the solution to any problem in the stillness. Take it into the stillness. And even when you're engaged in thought, trying to solve something, a problem or situation, step back from thought periodically. Thought has its place. It is more important to step back from thought and to look. After a while, thought comes back, perhaps with an insight or a solution, or the problem itself dissolves. Or other factors come in and you don't know how they got there. This question I referred to this morning, I mentioned it briefly, we'll just have a quick look at it again. Question: since childhood, if God consciousness was able to realize itself through you, Jesus, Buddha, etc., why doesn't it save itself all the time it takes for the rest of us and just do the deed, whatever set of circumstances it took to create a Jesus, Eckhart, whoever, just those same circumstances in the rest of us. Boo hoo. Many answers are possible depending what perspective. The very thing that's being asked is actually happening. This is the best possible circumstance and the best possible moment as far as liberation is concerned. It's already happening. Or you can change the question slightly. The question starts with, if God consciousness was able to realize itself through you, Jesus, Buddha, why doesn't it save itself all the time? You could put I instead. If I realized myself through that form, why am I taking all this time to realize myself through this form? Why am I giving myself, if I am consciousness, why am I giving myself all that time? And why not now? And be done with it. If you want it completely, it's here now. But that's not wanting to do with willpower, wanting nothing else. Now at the moment, perhaps you might say, yes, I want nothing else, but in 10 minutes' time you may want something else. You may want to be identified with a mind stream. Surrender now. It takes no time. The spiritual practice takes no time. That's the beauty of it. So, a lot of time is saved in that way. Because surrender, which is the doorway, takes no time and requires no particular circumstances even, except what's here. What's here is already ideal. Within the totality, what's here, the totality has brought that which is here into manifestation. It is connected with everything. This moment, the form that this moment takes, is connected to everything. It couldn't even be otherwise. The totality has brought it about. And so you recognize the perfection of it, not through some mental concept that says it really is perfect, and trying to convince myself it really is perfect, but through surrender to this. So all you ever need to do is get this moment right. In your whole spiritual practice, get this moment right, not the rest of your life, just this moment. You get it right by recognizing the rightness of this moment. Why are so many seekers women and so many teachers are men? It is true that in many gatherings there is a higher percentage of women than men. I don't know about here, it's maybe equal here. But in many gatherings, sometimes you had 70% women. And I speak about this in the book, that consciousness now moves more quickly through the female form. And what the questioner says was true until very recently. But it's no longer the case. Even within the last year or year and a half, I've met more women teachers than men teachers. They are arising. Yesterday I met a woman teacher who has an ashram nearby, Shanti Mai. And I met, even within a year, I met this Catherine Ingram in the United States. I met Byron Katie. I met Gangaji. There are many. Always wonderful to meet them. And everywhere now, the female form is becoming more and more of a vehicle for that. Until recently, that was not the case. Not that women didn't become liberated, but it wasn't recognized in what was mostly patriarchal societies. Even those women, they were not readily recognized by the established patriarchal structures of whatever their religion was. And we may come to a time soon when there are actually more female teachers than male teachers. There are some Indian female teachers also. And many of those women are destined also to become teachers, not we all teach in some way, teacher in a more conventional sense, actual spiritual teachers. Perhaps quite a few of those present here will become teachers if you are not already doing it in one form or another. And even in Tibetan Buddhism, there are now some women teaching through a form that before had only allowed the male. Three questions, which I may all read before any answer, all concerning sexuality and presence. I'm a man stuck in a man's body and would like to understand more about sexual addiction, which seems to come as part of the package of this form. Is it just a primal instinct, and can I ever truly evolve beyond it? Is celibacy required, helpful? I oftentimes hear people speak of Krishnamurti's sexual life. I don't think there was very much of that, but there may have been some. And so people say, I was a student of his until I heard about his sexual life. I feel he had to be writing from that place of presence to write what he did, and it touched me deeply. Can you comment, or is this too hypothetical? Do we have too many judgments around sexuality? Why is a great teacher so judged and negated when it appears he falls out of the parameters? I have some confusion because I want to defend him, and yet... Is celibacy required or helpful? These questions are kind of connected. Yesterday evening I stepped out onto the lawn outside and I saw two monkeys engaged in procreative activities. It lasted for a few seconds. And then it was over and the male monkey was eating. Uh, And the thought came into my mind, this monkey has no problem with sex. Just... Is celibacy required or helpful? That depends. It can be helpful or it can be a hindrance. It depends on the one who practices celibacy. Let's talk about the hindrance first. If celibacy is the result of adopting a certain mental position, a thought, a perspective on what sexuality is, and it is this thought attaches something to sexuality, from that perspective it is called perhaps impure or unspiritual. That is one of many possible perspectives. It's a thought, it's a fragment. It may contain a little bit of truth. The opposite thought may also be true. It is divine. But if you are a practitioner and the basis for your practice is identifying with a mental position, a perspective, a concept in the head, if that is the motivating power, because you want to make your life conform to the mental concept that you identify with, that the position that you adopt and identify with. And then you attempt to make your life conform to that mental position. And so then celibacy becomes your practice, and whenever sexual feelings arise, they will immediately, of course, be judged from that mental position as impure or as not spiritual. And then a time may come when you need to even deny to yourself that you have those feelings, if you're very extremely identified with those mental positions, because they clash with the mental image that you have of yourself as pure and spiritual. And so you have the reality, a sexual feeling arises, or sexual thought arises, and it clashes with the mind-made image of me. And it may go so far as to require you to deny completely that you even have it. Or if you don't deny it completely to yourself, feel guilty about it because you're not living up to the high standards that you have set yourself, mental concepts. So you are not living up to your mental concepts. And so the feelings then arise are not happy ones. And that further creates a problematic self-image as the struggling me who is still impure and hasn't made it yet. Guilt arises, perhaps self-doubt arises, self-hatred may arise, all strengthening your false sense of self. The ego doesn't mind, it loves feelings of guilt and not good enough, because it strengthens your sense of self. It doesn't mind whether it's the sense of self is of the master of the universe or not good enough. If I can't be the master of the universe, at least I can't be not good enough. Mental concepts. Or you may deny altogether that you have sexual feelings because they would shatter the image that you have of yourself as an advanced spiritual practitioner, having reached level 7 already. And at level 6 you go beyond sex. And so if you deny to yourself even, and this has happened in Christianity in the past, happened often, you can't even admit it to yourself because it would clash with that image, then it is totally suppressed. And if that is totally suppressed, which is a vital force, somehow, somewhere, it will come up again. And then it will overpower you completely. If you're lucky, only in wild dreams while you're asleep. And then you wake up and say, oh, dreadful. And then you may have some interpretation that the devil put some dreams into your head. Or they may come as suddenly a sexual obsession or some obsession to do with sex that you can't get rid of, and it becomes totally overpowering. And so you become extremely unhappy. So here we have then somebody who practices celibacy and is making it into a hindrance. Through it, he, she is strengthening their false sense of self, is strengthening their identification with a mental position and a perspective and a judgment, believing completely in the absolute truth of that particular thought or judgment. And that person can practice celibacy for a lifetime, and all it will do is strengthen the false sense of self. At some point, maybe sexual feelings may not arise anymore, and then that person may continue to build a mental image on top of that and say, I finally made it. I am pure and spiritual, but it may only be old age. My father called me up 3 years ago. He is now 85. So at 82, he called me up and said, I have finally transcended sex. And said, I don't know why people are interested in such things. It's so ridiculous. I need to add that he's all his life was very interested. And I said, that's good, congratulations. And last year he called me and said, I was wrong. And he was very happy to tell me that he had not transcended yet. So I said, congratulations. And then there could be celibacy that arises naturally in your life situation, and that enables you to observe, to bring presence to what is usually an enormous force that pulls you into great unconsciousness, an enormous life instinct. And celibacy could be helpful. A period of celibacy is good in anybody's life, but not artificially created. Be open to see whether it naturally arises out of your life situation. And then you can observe, make it into spiritual practice. You can observe the relationship, which can be a very powerful one, between your thought processes and sexuality. And it is often the case that even in people who are letting go of identification with mind, as a last resort, the mind will link into sexuality. And that can give renewed energy to mind activity. And the mind knows that. So that is there's a very strong link in many people between the incessant mind stream, and for great number of people, a considerable part of the mind stream is connected with sexuality, fantasies, images. And that link between sexuality and thought processes can keep thought processes going for a long time. So you can bring presence to the feeling, the sexual feeling, without it identifying with it, allowing it to rise up into the mind, and again becoming part of the psychological form of me. So that you have then sexual feelings that are not denied, because you do not adopt a particular mental position towards them, neither good nor bad. There it is. And you can watch how beautiful it is when a sexual feeling does not even turn anymore into sexual desire that wants more than what is here now. You can bring presence into the feeling so that the feeling doesn't become a desire. There's beauty, it's a manifestation of aliveness to simply acknowledge a sexual feeling directly, feel it, sense it. It is part of, yes, being in this form, which is limited. The form, the physical form in which you come, has certain limitations, and it's male or female. It's one half. It's never the whole. So that half always has a longing for completion and completeness, and that's the sexual longing. Now, you cannot, of course, achieve that completeness through the sexual act. It gives you a momentary sense of completeness, but it's very short-lived. But the enormous desire behind is at the root, we could say, of sexual desire, which is to do with the incompleteness of this form of being a half of the whole, either this or that, wanting union with the opposite polarity, that is a primordial spiritual impulse. I would go so far as to say that everything is ultimately a primordial spiritual impulse. Even when an animal devours another animal, it is the most primeval expression of love, merging with, becoming one with. And it looks dreadful from our perspective. So, not adopting a particular mental position towards what is. Use sexuality, whether you practice celibacy for a period of time or not, as long as celibacy arises out of the right motivation, it can be helpful. It can easily become a hindrance. So you need to be very careful with that. Can one ever transcend sexual addiction is the question here. That's a purely human thing, of course. Addiction means the mind has come in, and the mind wants to build a psychological me on top of your sexual exploits. The mind wants to repeat a past pleasurable experience when the body may not even want it. And then anything can turn into an addiction, whether it be food or sex or any activity. Watch and see how the mind tries to link in with the sex center, and how it uses that device to keep itself going. So, and if you practice sexuality, bring consciousness to it. That's the essence of Tantra, so that it becomes not a means to an end, but you are totally present with the feeling as it arises. You can do that whether you have a partner or not. You can simply allow the feeling to be there and watch it, and it doesn't turn into thought anymore. So you bring presence to that. You're not denying it. You cannot transcend anything by denying it. And transcending does not mean that it is not there anymore. It means to go beyond. You transcend thought. Thought still operates, but you have gone beyond it. You transcend sexuality. Sexuality, as long as there's a physical form, has its place. And it's embraced, accepted. You're not creating a mental image around it. Allow Krishnamurti the little that he had. If you allow Krishna, and he was so liberated sexually, wasn't he? If you allow Krishna to be so free, why not Krishnamurti? Beware of mental judgments and mental positions. That is the greatest hindrance. Anything connected with thought and sexuality creates problem out of sexuality. The monkey had no thought around it. That's why I was so impressed. That it is no longer addictive when the link between sexuality and thought is not there anymore. This, and then it's simply to be enjoyed, whether you practice it or not. If it arises, it is a manifestation of this physical form. And that's what it is. It is completely non-problematic. Only through mind does it become problematic. It's a powerful force. Bring presence into it. Anything unconscious that usually pulls you into unconsciousness, pain body, look at the link. There may be a link between pain body and sexuality. And you watch that. Oh. Nothing needs to be changed when you bring presence and acceptance. The belief that there is something in me that I need to change, that is not right yet, I need to transcend, keeps you stuck immediately in that very position that you seek to transcend. It's bringing acceptance into what is, including the limitations of this form. Then you truly transcend, you go beyond. Whether or not celibacy is then your way of life is a secondary question. It doesn't matter. Yesterday, on the bus tour of hell, I think some of you must have been on this bus. Yesterday, on the bus tour of hell, I was confronted with the fear of my death. This is not uncommon in Indian traffic. I realized that I do not fear my death for myself, but for the great suffering it would bring upon my children. Last night, that suffering came back. As I tried to embrace it, it got bigger. The suffering wasn't only mine, but the suffering of all the mothers on earth. It got bigger and bigger. I could not embrace such suffering. 1,000 mothers could not embrace such pain. What is there to do? How can a mother be a mother without the pain that goes with it? First, of course, the thing to realize is that you didn't die. You just thought you might. And the thought was just as bad as if it had happened. The thought itself, the possibility of loss create the mind, says there's a real possibility of me dying before we get to this destination. And the possibility of loss, that is a mental projection, often creates corresponding reactions that are just as painful, more painful in many cases, than if it had happened. So nothing actually happened on this bus except that it was unpleasant, I assume. So we can see how the mind already creates a situation that might happen, and then the entire body reacts as if it had happened. And this is a typical example of how the pain body gets triggered by something relatively small or only a thought of a loss that might occur. And then the mind projects itself into that and sees your children as destitute already. I'm dead and now my children. And then it's already basically happened in the mind. And then you experience the emotions that would go with that and worse. And it triggers the pain body. So you experience not just the pain that is connected with that projected non-existing event, but in addition, an enormous amount of pain that is totally non-personal, that is part of humanity's pain, perhaps part of female pain connected with child loss, part of the female pain body. So the first thing, of course, sitting on this bus to realize a mental projection is being created. The reaction happens as if that event had already happened. So that you don't get drawn into further mental projections. But it happened, and the pain body was there, far more pain than would be warranted by that situation in which nothing really happened. You didn't lose your life. So there it is. The mechanism of it, you can see retrospectively how the mind, through fear, projected loss, which is fear, created that. And then you had far more pain than your own personal pain. and far beyond that. And you couldn't embrace it, but you survived. So somehow you must have embraced it. And perhaps you were not totally identified with it. There was a witnessing presence. You realized perhaps that it was far more than your own pain or your own, the personal part of the pain body. Many children lose their parents, and quite often parents lose their children, which is worse. Both look dreadful, and yet each human being, sooner or later, will be confronted with death. And to some children it happens that they become confronted with death at an early age. And they survive. And that becomes a very early spiritual teaching. And those to whom life gives that insight, they are ready for it. It may not look like that on the surface, but to experience loss at an early age is very painful, but potentially that is already the beginning of spiritual realization, that no form lasts. Perhaps even more painful than that is for parents to lose their children. And if that is your lesson, and there may be some of you who had to go through that, and that may be one of the reasons why you are here. The suffering that you went through at that time, when the fabric of your existence suddenly no longer was solid.